Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday morning. It's the 11th of January, and I appreciate you being with us. We have a lot to discuss. We have a wonderful panel to do it with, so let us get started. Reminder, if you would like to join us, it's a very simple thing to do. All you have to do is write to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We get a whole lot of letters. We try to get to the ones that we can get to that are make some sense and we can read and, as I said yesterday, have verbs and the like. So we welcome you, panel@wamc.org.
So for those of us who went to public school, what is the verb again?
Rosemary, would you like to give the
action words, the most powerful in all the language? Use them.
Use them. All right. Let me introduce everyone, and we'll get started. Rosemary Armeo is here, an investigative journalist. I told the story yesterday, but I'll tell it again today. She's with us. People are saying it's funny because you've been on the show for so long, but then you've been away.
Right.
So for new listeners, they're like, who is that woman who comes on? It's just like shot out of a cannon. So Rosemary Armeo is with us since the inception of the panel. And then after the 2016 election, for some reason, she left the country and went over to Jordan to work with investigative journalists and to teach young people how to report in authoritarian regimes.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's very good.
Okay.
And a big shout out to our friend Terry Harrison, who found you for us.
Oh, yeah, I miss Terry.
So, Rosemary is with us. Was with us this week. She will be with us next week, and we are thrilled. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. I know. I love being here. I love for your being here. Most of them.
I feel the same way, Rosemary.
I took that as a personal insult.
Oh no, we have a natural affinity for each other, Alan. Our listeners have noted and criticized us for that.
You get letters saying, "Why don't you just slap him?"
Yeah, just put him in his place.
She's not within distance, just so you know, everyone.
Yeah.
No, I know. We've got her in there. That's right.
A whole table between us here.
Judy Patrick is here. Yay. She's Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. She also was a longtime editor of the Daily Gazette. And I contacted her about 180 minutes ago to ask her. We had a last-minute cancellation. David Soares could not be with us today. So I asked Judy if she could fill in, and she was... Johnny on the spot, and I thank you very much.
I am also insulted personally because I am a product of public education, and I know what a verb is. So
guess
there,
what?
Dr. Shattuck.
Guess what? I was teaching. I know, and I'll tell you how I learned. I learned because one day I was sitting in Spanish class, and they said, we're going to translate verbs. Hablar. And
we don't said, forget this stuff.
And either. I said, that's neat. I wonder why we can't do that in English.
All right.
Judy's just shaking her head.
Public education. Go, go, go. Producing some fine people.
Were you a Greenwich grad?
I was. Greenwich, I'll tell you, great
school. Yeah. All right. And, well, now, of course, your husband taught there for years. And,
yes.
Yeah. All right. Judith Henk is with us. She is senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, and former EPA regional administrator. We are thrilled to have Judith with us each and every Friday. And good morning.
Good morning.
Do you want to introduce your guests? Who won't be speaking, but they're in the studio with us. Are they allowed to?
Yeah,
are they not like skipping work or anything?
No. I'm thrilled to introduce you to two amazing women who were extraordinary and still are extraordinary environmental leaders in New York. Kara Lee from New Paltz.
Oh, yes.
Almost single-handedly cleaned up the Hudson River when she worked at Scenic Hudson, and then did incredible conservation work on behalf of the Nature Conservancy. Sam's Preserve, is that what it's called?
Sam's Point.
Yep.
Great visit. And my friend Sarah Johnston from Montgomery County, who is a national expert on organic agriculture.
Very cool. Well, welcome. Very nice to have you in the studio. Hopefully we can live up and make it exciting for you.
Stay awake.
Yeah.
a lot in here.
If it starts to flag, just raise your hand and we'll get Alan
Take
and Rosemary going and we'll wake you right up. All right. Let's start talking about what is happening in our world. And
I'm here too.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, Alan. I'm so sorry. I'm okay. Sorry.
Everyone knows you're here.
Oh, yeah.
No, but I forgot. No, that was totally my bad.
No, it wasn't.
Alan Chartok is here. And
what's
good
your affiliation?
Too late.
I got doing the introductions and the others, and I lost
too
all
late.
Track. I know. Well, good morning, Alan. How are you? Mm-hmm. All right. Good, 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 good. All right. Let's get started. We'll talk about what is happening. And the question, of course, is when will the government reopen, if ever? The White House considers using storm aid funds as a way to pay for the border wall. This is the latest twist and turn in this, which is after the president traveled to the border on Thursday to warn of crime and chaos on the frontier, as White House officials considered diverting emergency aid from storm and fire ravaged Puerto Rico, Florida, Texas, and California to build a border barrier, perhaps under an emergency declaration. In a sign of growing unease about the partial government shutdown, some Senate Republicans came off the sidelines to hash out a deal that would reopen the government as Congress worked toward a broader agreement tying wall funds to protection for some undocumented immigrants and other migrants. But before those negotiations could gain momentum, they collapsed. Vice President Mike Pence and other members of Mr. Trump's team let it be known privately that the president would not back such a deal. Senator Lindsey Graham said it kind of fell apart. Well, it didn't kind of fall apart. It fell apart. Okay, so this notion of taking... And this is the word that I, and Judith, maybe you can help me with this. I heard this used several times. It's used in this article. It was used on many of the cable news stations that I was watching last night, of unused emergency aid. That would seem to me to indicate that there is a surplus of emergency aid, but that is not the case, right? It's just aid that has not been actually allocated as of this moment.
Well, it's been appropriated by Congress, but it's not actually been spent. So, for instance, after Hurricane Sandy, there was congressional money to, say, rebuild homes or rebuild sewage treatment plants. So the check hasn't been written yet.
So the money's still in the account.
And because you eventually will need the money. You don't spend all of your emergency aid the first 6 months of the response. The response lasts for years. Mm. So this is literally taking money that Congress earmarked, bad word, but earmarked for fire victims in California, people who live through hurricanes in Texas and Puerto Rico, and sweeping the money before it is spent.
But you've also, Judith, you've been our go-to person on how bad the Trump administration has been towards Puerto Rico, for example. They didn't begin to use what they should have been using.
They were very slow to fund the needs in Puerto Rico. And I will admit the Puerto Rico government is not the model of efficiency. And it does take a while to spend that money. It doesn't mean that the need isn't there. You know, a simple example is maybe there's funding to rebuild a school. You don't spend all of that money in the first month. It's drawn out over a period of a year or two. So I think this is a direct slap at the people of Puerto Rico, the people of Texas, Florida, California. Interestingly, it came out the day after California governor, the new governor there, Gavin Newsom, gave quite an impressive but anti-Trump inaugural address. And of course, Nancy Pelosi's from California. And then you saw the tweet from the president saying he's going to withdraw money from fire victims in California. And he's never, ever been sympathetic to the plight in Puerto Rico, right? From, you know, it took him weeks to get down there. He threw the paper towels. So this is just salt on an open wound and so wildly irresponsible because the money is needed in these areas that have been so hard hit.
But can he do it? Is he legally authorized, able to do this?
Yes. I mean, I think there's a legal question on whether this counts as a national emergency. But
that is indeed the question.
Yeah, but he can reappropriate money. Not clear to me that he can do it without congressional approval, which won't be provided. But money does get reprogrammed in the federal budget quite regularly, just not this dramatically.
But to Judy's point, there will be a challenge. There's going to be a legal challenge, and we're going to see what our judiciary does.
And I predict he'll get beaten back in the federal courts, and then it gets appealed to the Supreme Court, and who knows what happens at the Supreme Court.
But a pretty good guess.
I think that Trump is deliberately extending this the shutdown. I think it's part of a broader plan to diminish and cut back on the federal bureaucracy. And he is loving everything that's happening. All the suffering that we're, you know, seeing now, it's exactly what he wants to happen. He is very cruel, and his policies are cruel, and he his overall plan has always been to shrink government, and this fits right in with it.
But he's such a liar, right? I mean, you know,
he didn't say Mexico would pay for the wall.
Well, that was one thing, but then he also said that the federal workers who were being laid off, who we were seeing on the
his
TV
supporters.
Every night and day about how they can't pay for anything and their kids are at risk and all the rest of that. One lady this morning saying she had to sell her car in order to make the money.
But let us be clear that he has done exactly what he said he would do, what he has stood for years. And the people, he has helped no one except billionaires and rich people like himself. And yet he has 40% approval in this country. So people are getting, again, I will say this, what they voted for.
Although I think I think most Americans don't like the idea of a federal government shutdown, especially if it's just over a policy dispute. So tomorrow would this won't be solved by tomorrow. So when this goes to tomorrow, it'll be the longest federal shutdown in history. And I think the Newt Gingrich shutdown followed Newt Gingrich for his whole career. I think this is going to result in at least some modest erosion of Trump's support. There was a really, I think, Rosemary, you may have mentioned this last week, the article where someone who works for the federal government and voted for Trump, almost an endangered species,
right.
She said, now he's hurting us. He's hurting the wrong people.
Actually, that was mentioned yesterday. Dan mentioned it, and I looked at that article. He sent it to us, and it's frightening. It's like, yeah, we wanted people hurt, just not us.
That says a lot.
But he has hurt many of his followers, coal miners and manufacturers. And
people without
farmers.
Healthcare.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, and people who are losing healthcare. And yet, this is, I will say this again, this is what they voted for. They wanted government shrunken and shook up. And Trump has been immensely successful at both those
Remember
things.
Steve Bannon said he wants to deconstruct the administrative state.
Correct.
That's what a shutdown does. And they don't believe in government.
Well, but I don't want to fight with Rosemary because she always wins. But
I do.
But,
it's
but,
true.
But there is this thing where there's a sort of tone in what she's saying, or as my mother used to say, don't take a tone with me. There is a tone which is these people are sort of deserving what they get.
You're reading that in there.
Well, maybe.
I have to admit that sort of, yes, I have in the past. They'll feel it now and then they'll see that we were right. But I have given that. It's been 2 years, Alan. I don't feel that way now. Now it's like, wow, they really did want this. They're seeing that it's happening. They're personally hurt and they are still supporting him.
And
that is a much bigger problem than my having vengeful feelings towards
them. Kids can't have a glass of milk or a school lunch if this thing goes wrong.
I think the vast majority of Americans, while they may, from a philosophical point of view, not like the idea of a government shutdown, I still do not think most people are being affected by
this
shutdown.
They're not
hurt. And until, like last night, there was a report about maybe food safety inspections not happening.
Right.
And I'm thinking maybe that will happen if there's an E. coli outbreak that we don't know. Or if the National Weather Service isn't updating its models and we're not finding out about snowfall forecasts appropriately, maybe that will impact it. But I do not think the man on the street, the woman on the street, they're really being affected yet.
Well, there's a lot that people don't know. They may be being affected. I flew to Washington on Tuesday for a meeting and in the morning read the articles about the Air Traffic Controller Association alerting that there's not enough FAA inspectors. The TSA agents, very sad not to be paid. But the most interesting part of the day was my Lyft driver was a furloughed federal employee. Who just listens to Washington, D.C. NPR all day long because they're really covering the shutdown with tremendous detail. And, you know, he is panicked. He's a young guy, can't pay his student loans. Washington was just the weirdest vibe there. And I think that the air traffic controller, the TSA agent thing, may be affecting people. If members of Congress and their staff start missing flights because of long lines, maybe they'll take it more seriously.
You know, we're very privileged with our federal government workers. They do many things for us that are not done elsewhere in the world, and those people survive very well. You don't miss it if you don't have it, and I think that's happening here. I agree with Judy. I do not feel like this overwhelming sympathy and worry that we don't have our federal workers on the job.
Well, I don't agree with Judy. And,
well, I'm closer to you than Rosemary, so watch out.
And I don't agree with you. No.
And then we're ganging up on you today.
I think there may be a demographic issue here too. Some of the people who are most hurt are people, you know, whose kids don't get their milk, or who are poor, or who, and there is a them issue there. You know, we don't care about
them.
They're
not the people Trump listens to or cares about.
Remember, this is a partial government shutdown. 25% of the government is shut down, so people are still getting Social Security checks. The only branch of the military not getting paid is the Coast Guard, and people don't really know what the Coast Guard does.
They keep out the drug dealers, which is so important to Trump.
You with think.
Ironic, isn't it?
What about the EPA inspectors?
Yeah, so there are 15,000 people that work at EPA. About 600 of them are inspectors, people who go to drinking water facilities, chemical plants, oil refineries, and do inspections. They are all furloughed, and so there's no federal environmental cop on the beat. We don't know what they're not finding because they're not there. So it also raises the specter of, are some companies cheating because they know EPA is not watching? But that's the part of the shutdown that I think we may never be able to document.
And here it's going to get worse, I predict, because the next thing you'll hear is, oh, those 600 inspectors, we didn't need them.
Right.
Look, you know, the companies did fine policing themselves during the shutdown. Goodbye, inspectors.
You mean there's only 600 inspectors in the whole
exactly.
country?
Yeah,
that was the first thing. I agree with you, Judy. I was like, man, I wish there was a little more.
I know. They do about 225 inspections per week for the whole country, but there are literally hundreds of thousands of places that need to be inspected. Now, there are also state inspectors. But, you know, I can tell you from experience, these EPA inspectors are dogged. They go out, they look from top to bottom at industrial facilities, and they almost always find problems. And often these are serious problems in terms of, are we breathing air toxins? Do we have high bacteria in our drinking water?
This is sewage real dumping life stuff. Into the Hudson River.
Yeah.
God,
absolutely.
You're just impeding business again, you liberals.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. And we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Judy Patrick, and Rosemary Armeo making up the panel this morning. Again, we welcome you, panel@wamc.org. Good morning. It's Friday. welcome. It's 35 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We have a wonderful panel. Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, Judith Eng, and Alan Chartok, who has letters. He'll do the letters now.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
And Deborah wrote to us and said, hire of 17 new Trump attorneys. This is something that that Rosemary alerted us all to last night, and it's an important story. Rachel Maddow reported on her show last night that 17 new attorneys were hired for Trump's legal team, bringing the total to 40. Why hasn't this been reported on the broader media? Oh, well, actually, this is not what I thought it was.
No,
this is the White House counsel.
Well, this has to do with the Democrats being in charge of Congress and the investigative procedures that now are expected. There's a whole list that's was put together even before the election on things that they could look into. Michael Cohen coming in front of the committee. Cummings Committee is one example of that. So the White House is wise to be lawyering up. They need it.
And also there was a mass staff exodus, which continues. So they had a lot of vacant lawyer positions, and they're going to need a whole lot more than
17. It's hard to be
17.
His lawyer. It's hard to be his lawyer. But and you find out that they are not used to being investigated. Mnuchin had a disastrous appearance in front of Congress yesterday, where he is not used to answering questions and being held accountable. He said virtually, according to Democrats, there, trust the administration.
And this
you love it. I gotta love it. Yeah.
These are not Trump's personal lawyers, also. Right. These are the president's lawyers. And it was, for the record, reported in the mainstream press. I read it in the Washington Post.
Alan's actually referring to a different story that I hope we'll get to when
we
talk about the attorney general.
We can do it right now, actually.
Good.
So, we'll wait on the letters for a second, which is the AG nominee, William Barr. He's making his way through the halls of Washington to knock on doors and try to...
Not Democratic doors.
No, but get support.
Amy Klobuchar had a really fight to get a meeting.
She didn't get talked to.
The question here that's being brought up this is how this got linked to the last story, as Rachel Maddow reported on it yesterday.
And Bloomberg has it today. I believe in sourcing, and Rachel
does.
Sometimes she's very innovative, but is not always exactly accurate. In this case,
that's
it has been.
Letters.
Yeah, it's true. I love her, but you got to be careful of all sourcing. But Bloomberg is also reporting.
Well, she's also
it
an
today.
Opinion show, and this is
exactly.
It's different. I don't know. I think that's a fair thing to say.
What she reported is being backed up today is that William Barr, the AG candidate, was the attorney general, as we know, under Papa Bush, the first Bush. Mm. And Bush was becoming very much involved in the Iran-Contra scandal at the time. And the special prosecutor at the time, special counsel, the Mueller of his time, wanted his diaries to find out exactly what his involvement was. And at that point, a mass pardoning of the people who had already been implicated in Iran-Contra got underway. Six people, not just Caspar Weinberger, the Secretary of Defense, who was widely seen as, he deserved it, but six people, all of the targets of the investigation of the scandal were cleared. And that effectively ended the investigation of the scandal. There were no more people to go after at that point except Bush, and he had protected himself. Barr was the man who pushed for the mass pardons.
Yeah, he was the architect.
He was the architect of it. In fact, Bush was one of the ones saying, "Well, we'll just take care of Caspar Weinberger." He goes, "No. In for a penny, in for a pound," meaning get them all off, and he did. And so the speculation is perhaps this is the reason, in addition to his stated criticism of the Mueller investigation overall, that he's being looked on so favorably by Trump right now.
This is really scary, don't you
think?
Very
scary. And so I hope this story gets out, if for no other reason than Democrats who will be questioning him during the confirmation procedure will ask a whole lot of questions about
and
it.
And I think Democrats should not make the mistake of just fixating on, are you going to let the Mueller investigation continue? It's much more nuanced, described. And also, he can starve the budget, especially if Rosenstein leaves after Barr is confirmed, which Rod Rosenstein, initial press reports were that he was going to leave. That's gotten a little murkier. But there's a million ways that Barr can gum up the works on this investigation.
I actually think that Mueller is far enough along that budget restrictions are not going to hurt awfully. Although he did ask for an extension of the grand jury, which means there are new threats.
Yeah.
But
we
still... And there are Democrats who can make sure that what he has gets out. It will all leak.
But remember, there's also referrals to other U.S. attorneys. The SDNY is probably just as important as the Mueller investigation these days.
Southern District of New York.
Sorry, Southern District
of
New York.
You know, I asked Chris Murphy yesterday when we had him on when we did our congressional corner, U.S. senator and all. And I said to him, well, how do we know we're going to ever get to see the Mueller materially, he said, without the question, he said, you'll see it.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's
I
in
said,
Congress.
Well, what does that
Democratic
mean?
Congress,
he wouldn't answer, but he said, you'll see it.
Yeah.
Good.
In the Barr confirmation hearings, though, I am concerned that the focus will be so heavily on the Mueller investigation that we're not going to get his opinions about where he'll take the Justice Department and other venues.
Right.
Like, because, as
Civil
you recall,
rights.
Jeff Sessions did a lot of stuff in his short-term in office. And those kind of issues like civil rights and his approach to immigration, those all need to be fully vetted.
Remember when John Kelly did his exit interview, he blamed Jeff Sessions for separating children from their parents at the border. He said, you know, that wasn't us. Department of Justice implemented that.
And surprised us.
Yeah.
We didn't know.
Yeah, except
happen.
That Kelly was in favor of it, too. He's no saint.
He's no angel. I know. I was never a John Kelly fan. I think he.
They're all
has
bad. I mean,
problems.
Poppy Bush, we just turned into a saint when he died. And now all the stuff about Iran-Contra, I was always angry at him about, you know, Clarence Williams, but. That's really
Clarence
bad
Thomas?
Stuff. Clarence Thomas. I'm having name dyslexia today.
Well, it's yeah. I understand not wanting to say the name Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, really.
But now we know, don't we, why I mean, he's so transparent, why the president wanted Barr.
Mm-hmm.
Because Barr had this history of working out pardons when things got really rough.
So do you think Rosenstein's going to leave?
I think I keep going back. Nobody else seems to see it the way I do. But remember the day that Rosenstein walked into the White House? He was going to get fired.
Right.
And he came out,
right.
And the two guys,
and
Trump and he,
fine.
Almost had their arms around each other. So something got said in there that reassured the president. And some of the possibilities were Rosenstein told him a little bit about what Mueller had or didn't have and was sort of walking away from that, or gave him some reason to believe he was okay. So I don't know that Rosenstein is going to turn out to be the hero of all time.
He's another one who we've deionized, and I'm not sure that we should have. He gave away a whole lot of that investigation in an agency that traditionally doesn't even talk about investigations. He gave away documents. He held hearings.
Right.
He kissed Trump's butt. He's totally a Republican.
And Comey always said, remember, Rosenstein is a survivor. He knows how to play the internal political game.
And if anybody knows about survivors, it's Comey. My God, the reason we have this president of the United States, everybody forgets it, is because of Comey.
I'm not defending Comey. I mean, I think he made a just horrific universal mistake with the way he handled the final weeks of the presidential election.
Doesn't get worse.
But no. I'm not sure about Rod Rosenstein. I guess on balance, I wish he would not leave, even with all the problems.
Yeah,
but
right.
It sounds like he's leaving.
Yeah.
All right. So we have letters. Let's go back
I'm
to those.
Career counselor.
We took a break from those, but let's get back to the letters.
Thank you, Rosemary, for alerting us last night. In the middle of the night, my phone goes bing,
ding,
and there's
ding, ding,
Rosemary.
Why were you up in the middle of the night?
Story.
I have jet lag. I can't sleep regular hours anymore.
Well, you're making sure that nobody else can either.
You can turn off the ding.
Judy's giving me that look.
I was thinking Alan was probably already up.
Yeah, he always boasts about that,
there's
doesn't he?
There's the first
yes.
3 hours. Then there's the middle of the night where I do a lot of reading that Joe sends and everything. And then there's, you know, a couple of hours at the end. So, okay, so Deborah says, we did that. Okay, so we did Deborah's. I got to get just a little bit more spittle on my hair. Russ says, same old, same old. Trump has done with federal government what he did with the Taj Mahal, driven it into bankruptcy, and refused to pay its workers and contractors. So what's new? And when I first read this letter, I said, what does Trump have to do with the Taj Mahal? And then I remembered. That's the name.
That Taj Mahal, right.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah, the New Jersey Taj Mahal.
But I do believe there's some real wisdom in that letter. I think it's exactly what this guy is used to doing. This is the way he played his real estate deals, and this is the way he's dealing with the entire country. Right,
but it's not working. Like his storming out of the meeting with Schumer and Pelosi the other day and pounding the table and saying bye-bye. Maybe that's how he negotiates his real estate deals.
It was.
It's not going to work.
But how do you know if the main thing, Judith, is keeping that base happy, that it isn't working?
Well, it definitely works for the base, but the base is not the majority of Americans.
No, but it's that base that got him elected president of the United States, as Rosemary always tells us. He did get there. He didn't get as many votes. Don't save
doesn't
your letters.
Care.
He didn't get as many votes.
Yeah, doesn't
don't.
Care.
Doesn't matter.
But the fact of the matter is he's sitting in the White House right now, and he thinks he can duplicate that by doing exactly this time what he did last time. And we heard from Tim, who said, ocean warmth up your alley there, Judith. A report issued Thursday in the journal Science indicates the world's oceans are warming 40% faster than predicted. Governor Cuomo stated that he has a legislative priority of transitioning New York to 100% renewable electricity by 2040. This would be a good start. Shouldn't we be aggressively making this a legislative reality?
Tim yeah, this is a major problem. The oceans absorb more heat than the land, so the oceans are protecting us, and 70% of the world's surface is oceans. So this is very, very troubling. I mean, we've always known this. The United Nations says that we need to solve the climate crisis within 12 years. So I would say the governor's goal of 2040 needs to be much sooner. It is now technologically possible to get to 100% renewables with energy efficiency. Currently, New York only gets 4% of its electricity from solar and wind. This is a major, major problem. We're behind Texas and Iowa, way behind California.
We're behind Texas.
We are. Texas has more wind than New York. Iowa has more wind. So I appreciate the governor's announcement. He's had 8 years, and so he's got a lot of time. He's much less time to pick up the pace on this issue.
And Rosemary, well, I know you're not going to like this, but I can just imagine all of those Fire Islanders sitting on the beach and looking out at the
offshore
at the windmill.
But we're going to talk to them. They're going to have to suck it up because everyone's going to be looking at wind turbines and solar panels if you want the planet to survive.
All right. On that,
for the people to survive.
On that note, let's take a break.
Happy Friday.
Let it seep in and let it haunt you for a few moments. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here along with Judith Eng, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo. We'll go back to the letters and then we'll move on to other topics. Go, Alan.
Peter says, wall. Let's be honest. Trump began the wall as a campaign rally chant, but now he sees it as a permanent monument to himself. It would be a giant scar across America, ultimately a graffiti-covered ruin. Hmm. That's from Peter. And then we heard from Doug, who said, declaring a national emergency for the purpose of going around Congress would be an act of tyranny. Republicans are betraying the Constitution and the nation by not standing up to this dictatorial grab.
So, you know, Rosemary's teaching journalists and authoritarian regimes how to work. Maybe she can do that work here in
America.
We need
America you to come back.
Come back and apply what I've learned there, what I've seen there.
You know, just on the national emergency, I think— he should declare a national emergency on climate change. Mm-hmm. He's just got the wrong topic.
Gotcha.
He doesn't believe that's even real. We're so far from what we should be doing. Oh,
but that would be a legitimate use of his executive authority.
Kenneth says, oi.
I like that you have to write that.
Says, what if we gave Trump the wall? It's really not that much money. And then we can begin to address climate change, health care, and poverty. And what makes you get it? He says, just saying, what makes you think if you gave him the wall, you'd get any of that stuff? You wouldn't.
And if you give him the wall, he may very well get reelected.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, there is some of that.
He may get reelected even without the wall.
He's
standing up for the people who he promised a wall to.
Well, I think he's also going to hit the reality of the federal government. There were media reports this morning that he's directed the Army Corps of Engineers to start letting contracts, and he wants construction to start in 45 days. That's adorable. nothing in the federal government, even when they're open, starts in 45 days. So there's not going to be much to point to.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
That's the word of the show. Adorable.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, too, is that is not even taking into account eminent domain, which is what percentage of that I read, an astronomical
huge
percentage of the land they're looking for, that's going to be tied up in court forever. I mean, it's none of this, even because, yes, he is saying that within just a few months we could have the wall done, ready, and shimmering on the Hill.
Right. And this is a big political fight. Yesterday, Politico called 17 House and Senate members who represent Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, so the border communities, and asked about Trump's $5.7 billion wall request. Only 2 out of 17 said they supported it. You can imagine Ted Cruz and then Martha McSally from Arizona. Mm.
So, did she get appointed senator from the other seat?
Yes, after she lost.
That's disgusting. After she lost.
Yeah, after that's why she conceded, I think, so rapidly. She had a deal with the governor that she'd get appointed. So much for democracy. But if you're only standing with Ted Cruz and Martha McSally politically, good luck with that.
Well, it's the whole thing, too. I mean, this case was made. I heard this point made a few times. I mentioned it yesterday during the president's address on Tuesday night that... national crisis, all right, if you want to make that argument, where's the governor of Texas? Where's the governor of Arizona? Where's the governor of California? Where are those governors? Where are the other people that are coming behind you and saying, oh, my God, we're scared to death? And you don't even have that within your own party.
Right.
So,
and Claire
not
says,
in California, but otherwise.
And Claire says, unseen effects of shutdown. My son and his company have been working on a cancer drug for 10 years. The drug is currently awaiting FDA approval. But there will be no progress until the shutdown ends. This is only one of the many drugs in the final stages of approval at the FDA. People whose lives may be saved by these drugs may die because of Trump's temper tantrum, and that's Claire. And I think Claire makes such sense here, and I'll tell you why. Because we're still talking about the 800,000 federal employees. But those employees are serving a lot of Americans in one way or another. And so when you multiply... who's being, then Claire's point is exactly right. It isn't only the 800,000 federal employees for the few people who don't care about them. It's about the rest of us.
And I would guess there are actually more federal contractors and subcontractors than the 800,000 employees.
Sure,
and yesterday, Congress said they're going to pass a bill guaranteeing retroactive pay for the federal employees. Interesting, McConnell said he checked with the White House, and the White House said it was okay to pass the bill and the president would sign that bill. And that's kind of a little insight into how McConnell operates.
Well, he's been very honest about it.
He admits
it. He said, I don't do anything the president doesn't want me to do.
But the contractors and subcontractors, they won't get retroactive pay.
Right. And the drug may have to wait
until
somebody
gets the water supply doesn't get inspected, and the airline, the airplanes are not looked at as often.
And Greg from Potown, Poughkeepsie, says, since being in office, Trump has done so many favors for Putin, so maybe the government should look into having Russia pay for the wall. I'm burning garbage, says Bill. What do you think of Lafarge in Ravenna burning garbage to fuel the cement plant?
Terrible idea. And there was a Queeman's town board meeting last night where they were considering passing a really good local clean air law to restrict that. It's been delayed, but Lafarge is starting to actively mobilize against this local clean air law. But they really want to burn tires at the cement kiln and other waste material. And you know, that air pollution doesn't just stay in Ravenna and Queeman's. So anyone who's interested in clean air in the Hudson Valley should weigh in on this.
Jessica
I'm sorry, I was just going to say that's happening all across Eastern Europe since China pulled out of the selling
recycling.
It's being burned in cement plants specifically
and
causing massive pollution and problems. And the mafia is involved. Huge organized crime problem.
Jessica says, Storm Aid PR comment. I know it was a quick comment, but I think it's really inappropriate and misleading to call the government in Puerto Rico inefficient without context. It is a colonial imposition and has been for 120 years. Let the record show, Judith shrugged.
Well, how long ago was that storm?
Yeah, look, I love the government of Puerto Rico and the people of Puerto Rico, but I think the people of Puerto Rico would join me in saying it is an inefficient territorial government. And for instance, since January 1st, 21 people have been murdered in Puerto Rico. There is tremendous concern about how the police departments are responding to that. The people of Puerto Rico deserve better than what they are getting.
They should be a state, and they should be...
Well, that goes before the voters in Puerto Rico often, and they always go 50-50 and decide not to pursue statehood.
Well, the three choices are independence, statehood,
and status quo.
Staying the way it is, and that's the way it's gone.
Mm-hmm. But Hamilton begins there tonight.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
In Spanish?
No, but it's but Lin-Manuel Miranda is taking over the role and bringing it to his home country. And,
it's really
and it's a big deal for
home territory.
Yes,
not home country.
Thank
you very much. It's going to really boost morale in Puerto Rico.
And so Kevin says 40% versus most. Rosemary refers to the 40% for Trump in general, and Judith says most don't support the shutdown. The constitutional crisis is that we are being governed by the Congress. And not just the president, voted in by the minority McConnell-Graham nominees for Allen's Worst People's List, are leading the Senate, the only legislative body now standing in the way of fair and legitimate governing, into the oligarchy of Trump, the Koch brothers, Murdoch, et cetera, from Kevin. And Ken in Albany says, I don't understand the shutdown, and maybe you can explain something to me. Can't Congress override a presidential veto? Yes, but the Republicans in the Senate would have to be willing to do that, and they ain't.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of the letter—
They're not even willing to vote.
Right. They'll only vote on what McConnell gets direction from the president on.
That's right. No, and the reason for that is McConnell sets the agenda. He says what vote comes up. And he says, even if 100%, I'm interpreting this, even if 100% of my caucus wants this, I am not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, yes, boss.
Yep.
Okay. And Tom says, using disaster funds for wall. Dear panel, the idea of using funds appropriated for disaster relief to build a wall is another example of how corrupt our government has become. It mirrors what has been done with our Social Security benefits. Citizens need to wake up and put down their electronic toys and start getting more involved in the running of our society. And that's Thomas from Falls Village. And Gary says, economic effects. What about the economic effects of the shutdown? Restaurants and retail that depend on federal workers, landlords who aren't getting rent from federal workers, late fees that federal workers and contractors are going to have to pay that will not go into the economy. I believe the effects will be trickling in for months. Thank you. And that's Gary from Western Massachusetts. And as long as Gary from Western Massachusetts is talking about what's good for the economy and what may be good for Western Massachusetts, we want to remind everybody that today is the opening of the pot shop in Great Barrington. And the police will be out in force, obviously, and the cones will be there. And a lot of people will be there. It's got to be good for the restaurant business, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about the feds coming in and shutting it down.
No, apparently not. Apparently not. Okay, and then there is...
Yay.
Such a civilized law.
Then there's Michael, says McConnell. Hi, panel. What does Mitch McConnell have to gain from continuing to protect Trump, especially now, when his own constituency is being harmed? Why won't he end the shutdown?
What's stopping him?
No, it is not a good question. It's a bad question. The answer, of course, is that Mitch McConnell is looking at the polls, and the polls are showing his constituency. Republicans are still at like 90% in favor of Trump, and he's going to run himself for senator in 2020. He's not going to fool around with that. Right?
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We have more letters. We have much more conversation. We have more topics. We have more of everything. We'll get to that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our final round here with the roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, Judith Enk, and Alan Chartok, who has letters. We have a lot today, a lot of letters, and we'll go to those right now.
Okay, will do. Let's see here. Ann says, last night, Senator Mazie Hirono eloquently told Chris Hayes that everyone should call their members of Congress and say, go and tell Mitch McConnell to do his job. Bring those bills to the floor. His hands are not tied. He was able to put a tax vote through, stall and shut down Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Merrick Garland, et cetera, et cetera. Who said his hands were tied? I don't think his hands were tied. I think he's doing what's good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then Catherine says, renewable energy. Greetings. Even though it currently costs a little more per kilowatt hour, I have my electricity supplied by 100% wind and solar powered supply company. There are many. Thank you. And that's from Catherine.
Yeah, when you pay your utility bill, you know, even if you don't have the solar panels on your own roof, you can opt for getting clean, renewable energy. Most utilities offer that now, which is terrific.
There are those of us who really want, solar power on our roofs, like mm-hmm. Chartox.
Yeah.
And we've had at least three different people come out over the years to try to figure out if they could do it, but there's trees in the way or it's not pointed exactly the same way. Right. It's not good.
But then this is an alternative for you, yeah. Alan. When you pay your monthly utility bill.
You know, I hear you.
So for people who can't even, you know, for whatever reason, can't do it on their own homes.
Yeah. I want to figure that out. There must be some way. See, I approached Roselle about a big windmill in the middle of the yard, but she wasn't for it. But I was thinking that might be.
We could do a whole show on community choice aggregation where people can band together to get their electricity from a solar or wind project.
Right. Good thinking. Rona says, pardons. Could someone on the panel please tell me how the tradition of presidential pardons came to be? And why is there not a cap on how many pardons each president can give? It seems insane in big capital letters and ludicrous that a president can subvert the law. Well, anybody want to go there?
There was a major investigation of pardons done several years ago. And it looked at, there is a procedure, but it's a long tradition. It goes back, I mean, Jesus was pardoning people, so leaders have always done that. It's been there from the beginning. And there's a process, but the president has this wide, wide discretion.
And the governor in New York.
Yeah, and governors too, mm-hmm. right. Wide discretion on whether to follow the procedure or not. And there's been tons of scandals connected to mm-hmm. pardons in the past.
Sure.
Trump is fascinated with the idea of pardons yeah. because there is so little procedure. He can do whatever he wants.
Well, do you think he will? Given,
I think, yes.
When the rat is cornered in the corner, as I always say, will they bite? I mean, with nothing left, will there be pardons?
Look at Trump loves playing. I think he has lawyers and friends who are lawyers but not in lawyerly roles who are looking at presidential power, executive power. I think his use of the emergency powers, his use of spending disaster money on things that are not classical disasters. I think his use of controlling the military the way he does, get out of Syria now, which we're doing, mm-hmm. by the way, despite what Bolton said. Not using advisors, not using experts or ambassadors. I think he loves this and is exploring.
Oh, no, by the way,
it's like his TV show.
He's exploring all the weaknesses in our right. legal system involving
yes.
executive power.
And avoiding the norms. But by the way, and my first instinct was correct, which is that the reason, it's just not tradition, the president has pardon or clemency power under Article 2, Clause
yeah.
1
Absolutely.
Of the Constitution under the Pardon Clause. The clause says the president, quote, shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States except in cases of impeachment. So,
And can I point listeners to the Washington Post today, which has a really interesting analysis piece that talks about maybe it's time for Congress to rethink the amount of presidential powers it has given the president
yep.
at this point. I mean, a lot of this is almost like the Parliament in England gave the royalty a lot of its authority. Congress has abdicated.
And then took it away, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So yes, yeah, so yeah. Congress has abdicated in many cases, and I think maybe we should rethink this. What happened to Congress declaring war? That we abandoned that decades ago.
That's right.
Well, even the Merrick Garland thing. Why did that not go to the courts? Why did Obama keep that out? I think that's one of his major errors. That's not constitutional. He had a year to go when he made that appointment, that nomination, rather.
Well, you're right, of course, in terms of theory. But they didn't think they'd get anywhere with that. Katrin says, convenient deafness. I tried to call the White House phone number yesterday to give them a piece of my mind. I'll bet you're not alone. Regarding the Trump shutdown, public input can't hurt, right? Got a message that they weren't answering due to the current lapse in funding. I guess Trump is still listening to his favorite right-wing talking heads. Though, It's kind of emblematic of the nature of this administration, isn't it? Public input? Don't need no stinking public input.
Yeah, I mean, decision-making has been outsourced to Fox, so maybe people should start calling the Fox switchboard rather than the White House
switchboard.
That's
a good idea already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or one of Fox's advertisers.
Even better.
Yeah. Tricia, damage to our national parks. Greetings. I would like to add one effect of the shutdown that I've heard discussed by the panel. Actually, we have, but you're raising it again, which is good. Trump deliberately left the national parks open but unstaffed. Unlike Obama, who closed the parks when the shutdown left them unstaffed, the parks have been left open for 3 weeks and have been vandalized, according to The Guardian. The trees and some of the other vandalized parts of the parks cannot be replaced, will take centuries to grow. And that's Tricia from South Burlington.
Thank you. And Joshua Tree, in particular, has been damaged with ATVs and cutting down trees. But Alaska Public Radio had a story this morning that even though the parks are not being staffed, Department of Interior is continuing to hold public meetings and public hearings on reopening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil drilling.
Yeah,
that they keep open.
Oh, that they want. And Janice says, lawyers. My question is, who pays for all these lawyers that the president is hiring? Three guesses.
You do.
I understand there's like 35 lawyers.
Well, there is always a lot of lawyers in the White House counsel's office. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a fair criticism.
Although we have to remember that Trump was under the impression, and you pointed this out earlier in the show, that the White House lawyer is not the same as Trump's lawyer.
Judy pointed that out.
I'm so sorry, Judy. You see, I can't remember who said what.
Judith.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant. Oh, good. I'm glad you pointed that out. John says, pain. It's futile to accept Trump supporters to react to policies that will ruin them. The more pain, the better for Trumpies, who will simply be told and believe that it's the fault of Hillary and the deep state. Increase the pain and place the blame. That's how a personality cult works. Policies have nothing to do with it. That's John from Sandersfield.
You know, you're hearing about farmers in the Midwest who are trying to plan, you know, this spring's crops and whether or not they're going to have money to buy seed, and they can't move forward because of this shutdown. Or they're not getting that reimbursement check that the president promised them because the tariffs on the trade wars hurt their bottom line. So that money's not coming. And, you know, they've got tractors to buy, payments to make. And, I mean, that is Trump territory. Let's see. I don't think they care that dramatically about a wall because they rely so much on labor from other countries. But it's really hitting home for them.
Chris says, Chris says, is that 35 to 40% to get him reelected? Oh, no. Let's begin again. Is that 35 to 40% enough to get him reelected? Well, it worked the last time.
It worked the last time. And no, it isn't if the opposition to Trump mobilizes, stays motivated, gets out to vote. But there are many, many factors that contribute to that, and 40 is a very healthy number to start with.
It is. You are so right. And all you have to do is remember the John Faso, Antonio Delgado election. Reminds me of once when I was working in the New York City Police Department. I was riding around in a police car, and there had been a policeman shot, or the report of a policeman shot. Well, they came from the Bronx and they came from Staten Island and all these police cars rolling in there. And the sergeants at either end of the street were waving them off, going, go away, go away. We have enough people here already. That's what happened in that Faso Delgado election. There were so many people who came over from my hometown of Great Barrington alone and other places that it got to be there was no room.
The final 2 weekends of the Delgado Faso campaign, Delgado had more volunteers in the field than any other congressional race in the country.
I believe it.
Wow.
I believe that. Yeah.
That was very satisfying.
People were energized.
So, I mean, they were sending people home, right? Like, in some cases, they didn't know what to do with everybody.
We ran out of turf.
Yeah.
So,
which is a nice problem to have.
I've never had that experience where volunteering on a campaign where he had too many volunteers. And a lot of these people are staying involved. And Antonio Delgado is very smart. He's finding ways for people to stay involved, inviting them to,
that's
you know,
Fasso.
Town hall
he really
meetings.
Brought people together, didn't
Fasso
he?
Fasso did, was a uniter, yes. Yeah, not in the way he predicted.
Actually, Trump was the uniter.
But and Fasso was so Fasso close to Trump.
It's
a revisionist history for Fasso to say, the reason I lost was because of Trump.
Exactly.
Fasso was so connected to Trump, and his constituents saw that.
Well, the best thing that happened was when Trump was talking about why they lost the House, why the Republicans lost the House, and he beat up on Fasso, who wasn't good enough for him.
Yeah.
Okay. So, R. Jeremy, where the wind blows, Texas and Iowa have more wind power because they have more wind, especially Texas, which is huge compared to New York.
New York has a lot of wind, especially offshore wind.
Especially in Albany. Especially in Albany.
Yeah, you don't just willy-nilly put them up anywhere, but New York can do a whole lot more with wind.
Yeah.
Just drive out to the Tug Hill Plateau, right? A lot of wind out there. Central New York, upstate New York.
I once went to a wedding. What's the park out here up there?
Thatcher Park.
Thatcher Park.
Love it.
We almost blew away. Wow. It was unbelievable.
They have a beautiful, relatively new visitor center.
Yeah.
Everyone should go.
Well, there's not much to you either.
State parks are open. Federal parks
are not. There's not much to you. You probably could blow away.
Oh, that is so. That is such a weight oriented remark.
Sorry.
And it's not worthy of you.
I just watched Mary
Poppins. I
really
liked it.
I just watched Mary Poppins.
The original.
Okay.
And Barbara says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Judith, what percent of the U.S. population believes climate change is an emergency? Could a presidential candidate, when basing his platform on this agenda, would love that? 4 explanation points. Thank you, from Barbara.
The majority of Americans believe climate change is real, and it goes up every year. And I think there are some presidential candidates who are going to make climate change a major part of their platform, most notably Jay Inslee of Washington State. I don't think Tom Steyer is running for president, as he had previously mentioned. And then I think there are a lot of candidates like Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker. It may not be the central part of their campaign, but they will emphasize it.
And by the way, we haven't mentioned that all the papers are filled with the fact that Kirsten Gillibrand has bought 5,000 square feet of, or not bought, but
leased
5,000 square feet, and indicating to a lot of people that she's running for president. Can she win?
Yes. And she's leasing space in Troy.
Rensselaer County.
We may have a presidential campaign based in wonderful Troy. You can go to the Troy Farmers Market and then go and volunteer on the Kirsten Gillibrand campaign.
And you think she can win? I don't.
I think she can.
Okay, well,
another show.
Let's bet $10. Okay, here we go.
20.
Okay, you're on. Joe says, wall and environment. What about wildlife that will be separated on both sides of the wall? What is the environmental impact to nature? I guess we would have an experiment to see how many animals evolve separated by an impenetrable barrier.
So did you have to do an environmental impact analysis on a national emergency wall?
Typically, you would do an environmental impact statement, but not here in the Trump administration, where environmental laws are suspended.
Ignored.
With or without emergencies. But actually, Earth Justice and another group are planning to litigate on that issue. Although some of you may have seen the reporting yesterday where...
Not so impenetrable.
Yeah. All you need is a saw. They tested all the material that that is proposed in the Trump prototypes. In the steel one, a typical saw you get at a hardware store, you can cut through it.
Man-sized hole.
Hold on. Go ahead. And, try again.
Oh,
say what
I was
you're,
off?
Yeah.
Oh, I play maggot. Well, Judith is right. The little regular saw cut a lovely man-sized hole through the steel barrier prototype.
And there's also that old invention called the ladder.
Oh, the ladder's a good
one.
The
ladder would work on even cement.
Okay, let's go into the bonus round. We have 5 minutes, 3 topics. Let's go. Cohen to testify. Michael Cohen to testify before House panel in early February. Anybody have anything?
This is
that?
Terrific. I mean, this guy is going to really let him have it. He's going to say everything he wanted. I think he'd like to see a little bit of suspension of the 3 years they're going to put him in the pokey. Yeah. So he is saying, I'm a changed person and I'm not going to be for this guy anymore, and he has a lot to say because he was with him for all those years.
February 7th. Put it in your calendar. Buy the popcorn.
Radio. Must Hear Radio.
Must Hear Radio.
Oh, Must Hear Radio. Yeah.
He goes, to jail on March 6th. And I think this is not going to be his only congressional appearance. He's going to have a busy February.
Do they let him out of the pokey in order to come back and testify, if so called?
Why didn't he say it first? I'm sorry.
I just hope he tells us a little bit something about the tax returns as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and what's in the National Enquirer vault?
Okay, that's our minute.
Okay, no, now New York voting. Another cool topic.
Much needed.
Early voting and other changes to election laws are coming to New York. Oh, my goodness, you may actually be helped. You could vote by mail, same-day voter registration, early voting. Well, all of these are in many other states. They are not in the Empire State.
Okay, it's terrific.
Yes.
It's really terrific. I hope that the motivation is the right one, which is it will bring more democracy. But also, I have a feeling that the Democrats who now own both houses of the legislature understand that it's going to produce some more Democratic votes.
Okay, well, that's cool because Republicans who have been suppressing the vote across the
that's
whole country
right.
realize that this means they get the advantage when they suppress. So.
New York has some of the worst voting rules in the whole
Terrible.
Nation. So it's time for an upgrade.
And yeah. I hate ending on this story, but so a surprise announcement by the military said that the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS had begun the process of our deliberate withdrawal from Syria. As recently as Sunday, the National Security Advisor John Bolton had said that the U.S. could remain in Syria for months or years.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Well, it just shows, again, that Trump is undercutting his own people. Why would any foreign government listen to a Pompeo or a Bolton or a Mattis before he left? It's Trump who is the only voice that matters.
How about an Oval Office address where President Trump explains to the American people what his Mideast strategy is, so we all know?
He'd have to figure out a lot of things before that address, wouldn't he?
Jared hasn't figured it out.
I just think the amount of confusion, the amount of information the public's not
That's
getting.
That's adorable.
Maybe there isn't a Mideast strategy, right? But I think that's the appropriate use of a Oval Office address.
Jared's on the right side on the shutdown, and he did good on the criminal investigation.
Theoretically, he's on the right side.
Before he goes to jail, I'm not going to say bad things about him.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Sure, we don't really know. There's a double, triple fake out going on all the time. The press reports that he's really not for it, but maybe he is.
Well, he did get criminal justice reform done. That is one very good thing.
Right.
But I think whenever...
Unalloyed, a good thing.
Whenever we read about Jared coming to the rescue is usually Jared leaking to the press. But he really is not equipped to figure out the Middle East. I think we can all agree on that.
All right. We're out of time, but my thanks to everybody. Rosemary, we look forward to next week.
Yep.
Thank you very much for being with us. Judy, again, thank you very much for answering my email in record time. And
you are welcome.
Getting in the you're in Greenwich, I assume. So you like
exactly.
Make the trip. Thank you very much. That means a lot to me. Judith Eng, thank you very much. Thank you for bringing a studio audience. We like that as well. That was fun.
Thank you.
Alan, have a beautiful weekend. Thank you.
Will do. I have to sign a lot of letters.
All right. You'll be getting them in the mail shortly, folks.
Yes, you will.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.